Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for standing by, and welcome to the Solutions to Volatile Oil Prices conference call. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. After the speaker's remarks, there will be a question-and-answer session. If you would like to ask a question during this time, simply press star, then the number one on your telephone keypad. If you would like to withdraw your question, press the pound key. Thank you. I would now like to turn the conference over to Christina DiPasquale. You may begin.
Thank you for joining the call today to discuss what can be done to mitigate the sticker shock we are seeing at the pump today. Political instability in the Middle East over the past month has driven parallel unrest in world oil prices. Governments across the globe are worried that sustained unrest will escalate oil prices past $100 per barrel on their way to $120 or more, choking the struggling economic recovery in the United States and other nations and weakening our national security. At this time, I would like to remind participants that this call is being recorded, and by remaining on the line, you consent to being recorded. On the call this morning, we have Senator Jeff Merkley, member of the Environmental and Public Works Committee, to be followed by the Director of Climate Strategy here at the Center for American Progress Action Fund, Senior Fellow Daniel J. Weiss. Today, we'll begin with Senator Merkley of Oregon, a longtime champion of American energy independence.
Christina, thank you very much. I'm delighted to join in here, and I appreciate all the work the Center for American Progress has been doing on this issue. It's a little less than a year ago that I spoke to CAP about the pressing need to change the way we use energy. At the time, we were seeing the devastating effects of the BP Gulf oil spill, which was costing thousands of jobs in the Gulf Coast and contaminating a whole lot of ocean territory. And today, we again see the dangers of our dependence on oil. Price shocks over the last week as turmoil struck the nation of Libya, and more likely concerns on the way, of course, some concerns about the Suez Canal and Egypt and so on and so forth. I applaud the reformers who are standing up for their right to live in free and democratic societies in the Middle East, and I hope that that is the ultimate outcome of this conflict. The reality is that we do not know what will happen, and we have only limited ability to assess and adapt to a rapidly changing situation, which completely underscores why it's a terrible idea for our nation to continue to be addicted to oil, and particularly to be reliant on overseas oil to power our economy. The reality is that that dependence on oil makes us very vulnerable to regimes in the Middle East or Venezuela, Nigeria, to environmental catastrophe, and to long-term health damage to our children. And it is costing us about $1 billion a day. And that $1 billion goes out of our pockets into the bank accounts of Saudi Arabia, Libya, Venezuela, and so forth. So we do need a comprehensive solution to end this dependence, which has caused and will continue to cause so much harm to our nation. I just came from a committee hearing with Secretary Chu. Senator Cornyn noted the need for a national plan. I then chimed in saying that we do need a national plan, and I had conversation with the Secretary about the Department of Energy coming forth with such a plan. He said they're working on it, and that they're working particularly to evaluate all of the price points and the various relevant technologies so they can bring forth a very detailed roadmap, which is music to my ears. I then gave him a copy of the proposal that I and three other senators put forward last year, America Over a Barrel, Solving Our Oil Vulnerability, and told him I look forward to the moment when he can hand me a similar plan back from the administration, benefiting from all their more sophisticated analysis. But while that analysis might put some fine print into a plan, we already know that there are a lot of technologies that can be brought to bear on our basic circumstance. Our basic circumstance is that we import 23% of the world's oil, yet we have less than 2% of the world's reserves. Therefore, we cannot drill our way out of this. We can, however, do a lot with passenger vehicles, both in terms of more efficient passenger vehicles that utilize gasoline, but also vehicles that are plug-in hybrids and electric cars. I just went to a car show recently, and we had about six different models of cars that are en route to coming onto the market that are electric or electric hybrid. By the way, the plan that I and other senators put forward last year, the plan America Over Barrel, is at merkley.senate.gov. So we can do a lot on passenger vehicles. We can do a lot with light-duty vans, many of which are headed in the direction of using electricity, in part because delivery vans have to stop and start so much that they benefit enormously from regenerative braking and therefore fuel systems based on electricity. We can do a tremendous amount with trucks, both the conversion of trucks to natural gas, particularly on set routes that don't have a particular infrastructure problem in the short term. We also have a series of technologies from automatic tire inflation to better airfoils that improve mileage on existing trucks. And we can work to shift more freight from trucks to barges and to rail, which are enormously efficient. There was a group from rail going around the Capitol with the number 457 on their lapels, which was the number of miles that a single gallon of fuel will propel a ton of freight, which is a very impressive number. We can do much more in terms of mass transit and the ability for people to commute to and from work without using cars. So these things are all feasible, and we need a coherent strategy as a nation, and that's why we need to push for the administration to put out their version of this, recognizing that there'll be ups and downs in the energy economy. We wouldn't have recognized that the supply of domestic natural gas would increase as much as it has over the last few years. There'll be other situations where our best forecast will require a change in the plan, but we need a roadmap to get us on to the road to energy independence. And so I want to encourage very much that we pursue this. It certainly has many elements that are very bipartisan in concept. I think for most folks, they understand that this type of energy strategy can enormously increase American jobs by becoming reliant upon red, white, and blue American-made energy. And on that note, I'll conclude. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Senator Merkley, and thank you for your leadership in this area. America Over a Barrel was an excellent proposal when you made it back in June, and it's even more relevant today. And we endorse the provisions that it included in his bold proposal. We strongly agree that we must invest in alternatives to oil, particularly in electric cars and natural gas trucks. However, we're also facing an immediate problem, which is we're on path for a short-run oil and gasoline price spike. Oil is over $100 a barrel, at least as of a half hour ago, and today's the longest that we've had that price since the trouble in the Middle East began. In the short run, we've got to take action to bring down oil prices and gasoline prices to protect American families and protect our fragile recovery. We are urging the president that when gas hits $4 a gallon, he should sell 30 million barrels from our full emergency reserve, which is what both President Bush and President Clinton did to lower prices and generate revenue. And I might add, when both presidents did it, the price of oil was much lower than it is today. I think in President Bush's case, it was like in the low 60s when he put 30 million barrels on the market right after Katrina. We ought to take the revenue generated from selling this oil, which at $100 a barrel would be $3 billion, and invest it into getting people to buy more electric vehicles right now. Let's turn the tax credit that we have for electric vehicles into a rebate, so that will help buyers that may not be able to use a tax credit. We need to ensure that we lift the caps on the number of electric vehicles eligible for the tax credit. In addition, we should take some of the funds from selling this reserve oil and invest it in making public transit more affordable right now. Those are two steps that we can take right now to reduce oil prices. One other thing we need to make sure we do is to make sure that the Commodities Futures Trading Commission cracks down on oil speculators in a way that they stood on the in a way compared to when they stood on the sidelines under President Bush in 2008. As we hit record oil and gasoline prices. Now, it's important to note that we can pay for these investments and other investments not only by selling this oil, but by eliminating nearly $4 billion annually in unnecessary tax breaks for big oil companies. Last year, four of the biggest oil companies made over $75 billion in profits. Surely they can afford this small sacrifice. And an analysis by CAP just released on Monday shows that as oil prices rise due to instability in the Middle East, that big oil profits will rise as well. So as prices rise, they have even more leeway to afford cutting back these tax subsidies that they don't need. Unfortunately, the House of Representatives, led by the Republicans, have voted twice in the past week to let taxpayers to continue to subsidize big oil. Last Friday, the House voted to allow oil companies to evade $1.5 billion in royalties from oil that they get from our waters. It's our oil, but they evade paying us royalties. And yesterday, the House voted to retain these billion-dollar tax loopholes. Now, some have argued that we need to drill, baby, drill to get out of this problem. Offshore oil is going to remain an important part of domestic oil production, but it can never get us out of this mess since we have 2% of the world's oil, but we use 1/4 of the oil's resources. In addition, drill, baby, drill will not produce any additional oil for at least 7 years and provide no help to American families now. So I want to thank you again, Senator Merkley, for joining us and for your proposals in America Over a Barrel. And I will turn it back to Christina.
Thank you, Senator Merkley, and thank you, Dan. Before we open the line for questions, I would like to remind press that the full audio will be available on our website at www.americanprogressaction.org. Also on our website, you may read more on our comprehensive oil savings agenda, and that's at americanprogress.org/issues/energy. If you have any questions or would like more information on the content of this call, you may email me at cdipasquale, that's cdipasquale, at americanprogressaction.org. Operator?
At this time, if you would like to ask a question, simply press star, then the number 1 on your telephone keypad. We'll pause for just a moment to compile the Q&A roster. Your first question comes from the line of Martin Roth.
Yes, thank you. Basically, the State of the Union, of course, emphasized this goal of 1 million electric vehicles, et cetera. Are there any provisions in your proposal, Senator Merkley, to provide for some intermediate technologies, biofuels, other fuel efficiency or fuel replacement, petroleum replacement technologies?
My plan does address biofuels. It's essentially an investment, an R&D strategy in next generation biofuels at this point. We have one of the first commercial efforts to utilize timber pulp to create advanced biofuels in Oregon. It's a company called ZChem, but it's not, by our estimation, going to make too big of impact in the short term.
Thank you.
One thing it's important to note, this is Dan Weiss, is that President Obama has already taken two important steps to reduce our use of oil. First, he's issued the first increase in fuel economy standards since the 1980s that would save close to 2 billion barrels of oil. Second, he is currently working with the Department of Transportation and EPA to develop the next round of standards that will make cars from 2017 to 2025 even more fuel efficient. Hopefully these cars, by the end of that period, will be getting an average of 60 plus miles per gallon, and that will also save billions of barrels of oil.
Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Paul Barton.
This is Paul Barton with the Gannett Washington Bureau. Senator, again, I have to ask you, how do you overcome the lobbying power of the oil industry on these issues?
I'll tell you, I think that the answer is really that there are three main factors that drive this conversation, and when you combine them, they create a very strong bipartisan platform. And the first is to spend our dollars at home to create American jobs. Jobs, I think, is at the top of the list for virtually everyone here in Congress. The second is to improve our national security. Certainly current world events put a punctuation mark on that concern. And the third is to address and improve the way that our economy interacts with the environment. And so different pieces of those of that set may resonate differently in different places, but together they're a very strong platform for taking on this issue.
It's important to note that several of the provisions in Senator Merkley's plan already have bipartisan support. For example, Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee, the number 3 Senate Republican, is a strong supporter of an electric vehicles program. And then Senator Tom Coburn of Oklahoma, a conservative from Republican, is a strong supporter of investments in natural gas trucks and buses. Likewise, there's also bipartisan support for these bills in the House. So I think there's a base that we can build on to move forward in a bipartisan way, hopefully with the oil company support, but without it if necessary.
And I'll just note in follow-up that Lamar Alexander and I got together to plan an electric vehicles bill early in 2009, and put out the bill last year along with Senator Dorgan. We are working to do a revised version of it now, and we come from very different places in the country. But what Senator Alexander would point out is that there is unutilized electric power from Tennessee's nuclear power plants, and so a tremendous amount of car charging can happen with no increase in electricity supply. We're essentially utilizing what is now wasted energy. Of course, he's very also excited about the domestic manufacturing of the LEAF, which will be taking place in Tennessee. Coming from Oregon, I have a different set of regional issues, but reach the same conclusion that electric vehicle deployment is technology that is at hand, can be promoted quickly. It can start to make a big impact. Recognize that 1 million cars sounds like a lot, but that's a drop in the bucket to the overall potential. When we recognize that there are, I think the number is 200 million cars on the road.
Once again, if you would like to ask a question, press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Your next question comes from the line of John Siciliano.
Yeah, hi, Senator Merkley. I just wanted to see if your plan basically incorporates the same legislative agenda that I think it was you and Senator Dorgan had latched onto in the last Congress with the EV legislation that Senator Reid also put together in an oil spill package that really that didn't go anywhere, but I was trying to see if what's the next step for moving some kind of transportation or EV legislation in the Senate, and what are the prospects for getting something similar done in the House?
The answer to your first question is that Senator Alexander and I are immersed in doing a revised version of our electric vehicle bill. We hope to have it done in a matter of a month or two. The prospects in the Senate are certainly enhanced by having bipartisan support. I don't have any clear insight, if you will, particular insight on the prospects in the House, but we'll certainly be working to build support on the House side as we proceed.
This is Dan Weiss. Unfortunately, yep. The House of Representatives is already taking us in the opposite direction that we need to go in terms of reducing our oil use. The budget that they passed would not only cut funding for investments in advanced battery research and money to help domestic auto companies or auto plants retool to build these clean cars of the future. But it would also, at the same time, maintain the nearly $4 billion in oil company tax breaks that are completely unnecessary for an industry where the biggest five companies made nearly $1 trillion in profits over the past decade. So the early signals from the House are not encouraging, although, as I mentioned earlier, there are Republican co-sponsors of the companion bill to Senator Merkley's on electric vehicles in the House.
And I should note that the president deserves credit for putting into his budget vision a version of our electric vehicle deployment community's strategy. It's a somewhat more diffused approach. We concentrated on creating a smaller number of larger community investments in different types of economies around the country so that the results back would be useful in understanding how electric vehicles might function in a whole variety of settings and provide the research basis for nationwide expansion. The president's plan is a little bit more diffuse in terms of communities applying for grants. But the point is, they both these are variations on recognizing that we've had a little bit of a chicken and egg problem. Do you have electric vehicles that drives charging stations or charging stations that then invite electric vehicles? We need to push on both sides of this at the same time.
Is any of that, Senator, going to be incorporated in the newer version of your legislation? I mean, something with your...
Yes, we're looking at that possibility. At this point, it's really too soon to say. There are advantages to the approach that Lamar Alexander and I laid out in terms of providing in-depth feedback. If you make the soup too thin, you don't really establish a significant deployment community, and so we're trying to get our hands around kind of just how it would work under the administration's vision. But the underlying point is that they have recognized that this emphasis on deployment communities is valuable, and so we can chew on the details, and that's what we'll be doing over the next few weeks.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Your next question comes from the line of Jason Plow.
Thank you. My question got answered.
You don't have another one?
Is there more the government can do now to encourage people to purchase electric vehicles, or do you think that the rise in oil prices will kind of drive consumer interest?
Jason, I'd just shortly say that the things we've been talking about in terms of deployment communities, charging stations, and subsidies for the purchase of vehicles are all the key elements.
Okay.
Yeah, and Senator Levin actually and Senator Stabenow have a bill that would help increase demand for electric vehicles right now. Their proposal, which I mentioned in my opening remarks, would turn the $7,500 tax credit that you can get for the purchase of either an electric vehicle or a plug-in hybrid electric vehicle like the Chevrolet Volt, turn that from a tax credit into a rebate so you get the money back right away. That would increase demand for these cars. Already, GM is reporting that they're doubling the order of Volts that they were going to make this year and planning to increase the number they're going to make next year as well to keep up with demand. The second thing that we can do, which is also in Senator Stabenow and Senator Levin's bill, is right now there's a cap on how many vehicles each company can sell that are eligible for the $7,500 tax incentive, and that cap is 200,000 vehicles. That should be raised to at least 500,000 vehicles in order to keep people buying them. To make any new technology change, you need three things: markets, finance, and infrastructure. The Levin-Stabenow bill talks about finance to get the cars on the road by getting people to drive them. It helps create a market for them as well. Hopefully the president's budget and hopefully the Senate's budget will include more money for research for advanced batteries. And then the infrastructure piece is exactly what Senator Merkley's bill does, which is helps build the recharging infrastructure that's going to be important for people to have the confidence to drive these cars in their community and that they'll be able to get them recharged away from their home.
All right. Thank you.
Our final question comes from the line of Stephen Cook.
Thanks for having this call. Some people have criticized electric vehicles, saying that they're not actually low emissions because they, in many areas, they depend on high emissions coal generation, and that electric vehicles should not be automatically considered low emissions. How do you what do you think about that?
Go ahead, Senator.
Well, largely it's simply wrong. And to give you some sense of this, I already noted that in parts of the country you have surplus energy from nuclear power plants that is being currently wasted and can be utilized to charge at night. Certainly you have other places in the country that are where the electricity is primarily produced by natural gas plants, but they are more efficient in terms of carbon dioxide. They're less polluting, even when you account for transmission of electricity over lines and so forth. But it's still a net environmental improvement. You have other places in the country where you have surplus wind or surplus hydropower, and we have some of that in the Pacific Northwest. And so, and then you have other places that have a variety of efficiency in coal. And I can't speak to the least efficient coal plants, but the more efficient ones, it's my understanding, you still have a carbon dioxide gain over, and it's an improvement in terms of emissions over having power produced in individual power plants in millions of cars across the country.
Senator Merkley is exactly right. And one other thing to think about is an excellent companion piece to moving forward with America over the barrel agenda would be a clean energy standard of the type that President Obama proposed in his State of the Union, where he also made the set the goal of having 1 million electric vehicles on the roads by 2015. A clean energy standard could dramatically increase the amount of the clean energy of the kind that Senator Merkley was just talking about, wind, solar, natural gas, nuclear, compared to dirty coal. So if you had those two measures together, then you'd have electric vehicles being powered by significantly cleaner energy. I don't think we should try and burden the oil reduction agenda by trying to then also tag on a clean energy standard to it. I'm not sure the legislative process could handle that right now, but certainly moving those two measures together work very well in tandem.
Your next question comes from the line of John Siciliano.
Dan, I just wanted to follow up. You sort of answer my question. I was just wondering. I've heard some utilities talk about moving the 1 million goal, the 1 million vehicle goal, not in coordination, but as part of a clean energy standard. But you're saying that would be too much of a burden for the legislative process to actually incorporate a 1 million vehicle target into a clean energy standard as part of the an incremental goal toward developing out renewables and gas and whatever else.
Well, certainly that's my sense, but you know, Senator Merkley would be much better able to judge where his colleagues would be on this. But let me finish up. I was at a forum yesterday with the head of the Edison Electric Institute, Tom Kuhn, and he basically welcomed investments in electric vehicles because they see it as a way to continue to market and sell some of this excess power that Senator Merkley referred to earlier. Okay. What's unfortunate is that the House Republican budget that is now heading to the Senate for the rest of this year would actually disinvest in reducing oil use by disinvesting in electric vehicles and disinvesting in public transportation, both of which are going to help us reduce our oil use, which will help us lower prices and will help us strengthen our economy in the way that we've been talking about.
John, I'll just say that I think that the complexities of the energy conversation from last year give some sense of how confusing and convoluted the conversation can be. It may be that a renewable energy standard
bill could come out of our Energy Committee in a format that could move simultaneously, that'd be great. But I don't think anyone has a sense that we need to tie the two together. Each one has considerable merit on their own, and we should push forward on both fronts. I do apologize. This is the last question I can respond to, so I just want to close by noting that it's great to have the terrific work that CAP is doing. I appreciate you all getting on the line to have this conversation. Being in a smart place vis-a-vis energy is a key piece of our economy being on track in the short term and in the long term. So it's a debate that we need to spend a lot of time immersed in. And thank you all very much.
Thank you, Senator.
I would now like to turn the floor over to Christina DePasquale for closing remarks.
Thank you. As we conclude the call, I'd like to thank Senator Merkley and Dan Weiss and remind participants that you may find the full audio on our website, again, at AmericanProgressAction.org, and our comprehensive oil savings agenda at AmericanProgress.org/issues/energy. If you have any further questions about the content of this call or would like more information, you can email me at CDIPASQUALE@AmericanProgressAction.org. Thank you.
Thank you for joining today's conference call. You may now disconnect.